Russian episode. If these two can learn to stand each other, the bad guys don't stand a chance. And by these two, of course, I mean Dave and myself, Ryan.
I'm one of those two guys.
He's one of them. Do you know what tagline that movie's from?
Oh, yeah.
Because we're about to talk about it.
Yeah.
Which of those two do you think you are?
The
black one?
Huh?
The black one?
Maybe.
I think so.
I am old, yeah.
Yeah. Because every time I see you running around with those kids, I just keep thinking, you're getting too old for this, Dave.
Yeah.
Not plus, too old to do.
Plus, entire... every time I go to the bathroom, it seems like there's a bomb in there. Although, okay. I think that's from a sequel to this one.
Yeah, but I understand you like wanting to not let me transition so that you could make that joke, and it was worth it. It was worth it, so I'll give you that. That is our tagline for this week. If you think you know what that tagline is from, if these two can learn to stand each other, the bad guys don't stand a chance. Zip that off to us in an email, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can tweet your answer directly at Dave at moviesonup on the Twitter, or leave it somewhere on our Facebook page, which can be found at facebook.com/moviesonup. If you answer correctly, and if we choose you, you can win a prize package that will be delivered with love from Dave and myself at some point in the future.
Yep.
Dave agrees. I think we're both in agreement that Iron Man 3, pretty decent movie.
It was an okay. It was a good start, kickoff to the summer.
Exactly. So much so that about 3 weeks later, we've decided let's devote an entire episode to talking about
it. This one was tough because this one, there were a lot of, there were spoilers that
yes.
could ruin it for you because it was, it's so hard to be legitimately surprised at a movie now because of the internet culture and
jerks like us.
Well, yeah, and people who want to treat a spoiler as a news story. So yes. you want to be the first one to tell people about it. And the fact that I was genuinely surprised by this movie, I thought was great.
Exactly. So that is the reason, more than anything.
We didn't want to be the jerks that ruined it for anybody.
Right.
Because I know, even when you say, oh, big spoilers ahead, don't read this if you haven't seen it, or don't listen to this if you haven't seen it, I'm terrible at those directions.
Sometimes accidentally you just glance and then, oh no! This, I mean, does take a bit more because you actually have to download it. We're telling you there are spoilers. We're telling you if you haven't seen the movie, pump the brakes.
We're going to spoil the whole movie.
And it's not going to take very long. We're going to get into it pretty heavy, pretty quickly. But before we do that, there is something I believe that we need to get to first.
I think it's time for a bonus list. These are the top five movies written by Shane Black. Number five, Last Action Hero. Number four, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, also directed it. Number three, Lethal Weapon. Number two, another buddy movie, Last Boy Scout. And number one, a movie he co-wrote, Monster Squad.
How do you skip over Lethal Weapon and say that The Last Boy Scout is another buddy movie?
I said another buddy movie.
Okay.
Because Lethal Weapon was the first buddy movie.
Okay, that's what you are.
Last Boy Scout is another buddy movie.
Fair enough.
So was Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Yes.
Technically, Last Action Hero, kinda.
And Monster Squad. They're all buddies.
Yeah, that's a group buddies movie.
Fair enough, yeah. I'm just angry that Last Boy Scout is number two.
I love that movie so much.
I like the movie fine. And I think it belongs on this list. I just think it belongs at number four. That's just my own personal opinion. But since you put the list together, I will let you leave it at number two. And that's fine with me. From number two to number three, that is, of course, Iron Man 3. Before we really get into plot-heavy kind of stuff, I just kind of like to get maybe your overall thoughts of the movie, kind of what your impressions were maybe going in and how they might have changed going out.
I was so excited for it. I loved the dark tone of the trailers.
Right.
In the trailer, especially the first full trailer we got, was just 3 minutes of Iron Man just getting his ass handed to him, essentially. So I was really excited for it. I was really happy, like, wanting to see it. When I left, I was pleased. I did have a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun there. As I look back on it, I like it less and less as I go, but I still really like it. Because I left with a few things that bothered me. But then as I think more, there are a few more things that bother me. But nothing that takes away from the entire experience.
Seeing it the first time, I really, really liked it. When I went back to rewatch it again to kind of set up this show, there were some things that really did kind of bother me. And there were some parts that I was just like, okay, now I know that I don't like this. But I didn't really get that the first time. I guess the biggest thing for me is, I guess, the impression that I had going into the movie because of the trailer, that it was going to be really, really dark. It didn't end up being
it. It wasn't.
It was not the movie that I thought it was going to be going in, and usually that's a bad sign, but this still ended up being a good movie.
Yeah. I expected, you know, a dark superhero movie, and I got The Avengers, which I'm okay with.
Like, had dark-ish moments.
Yeah.
But it was... You know, it was not the movie that I thought it was going to be. They fooled me on many levels.
They could have gone darker, but I don't think it detracts from the movie that they didn't. I mean, overall, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, we talked about the tone being, you know, maybe dark. It was more tonally in line with the Avengers. Where do you think it kind of fits in with the other two Iron Man specific movies?
The first Iron Man is hard to top because it's always... The sequels to comic book movies should always be better, at least from a more fun standpoint, because you're not setting up the story.
There's no origin, right?
But the origin was done so well, because really, Iron Man isn't interesting. Tony Stark is interesting. And the first one had a lot of Tony Stark. So did this one.
Yeah.
Second one, it's kind of the weird one in the middle that it wasn't that great. I didn't hate it like everybody else did, but I'll admit that it wasn't that great. One is just such a good movie. Three, I liked a lot. I don't think I could put it
up. You
wouldn't
put it ahead of one.
I don't think I can, because I really did like it a lot. But as a movie, like as a story, you know, get to story from A, B to C, I like the first one better.
I think initially I would have argued with you. I would have thought, you know, I really like three. I like the moments in it. I like the pacing of it. But then after seeing it a second time, I don't like the pacing as much as I thought I did. There are some parts that I think drag and that don't need to be in there. They don't do anything to advance the plot. So I think I would agree with you that number one is still the best. This is a far better movie than two.
Yeah.
In my opinion, it completely, you know, redeems, not that the franchise needed redeeming, but I think it does go a long way to kind of make you forget about how bad the second was. And I think that that's due in no small part to the director, Shane Black, coming into the franchise. I think, you know, we both might have been maybe a little bit skeptical about his ability to take on the project as a director, because he hadn't really had anything this large.
His directing, I was excited when he took over, when he was hired to write.
Right.
When he was announced as director, I like the only thing I've seen him direct, and he's been around big things.
Yes.
But he hadn't actually done them. There maybe was some hesitancy, but I like his directorial debut so much that I was going to give him the benefit of the doubt. But it felt like a Shane Black movie. It really did.
It did. And I think that maybe having experience with Robert Downey Jr. and kind of being able to write. So, I mean, I think that character in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang was very much similar to Tony Stark. I mean,
the way Shane Black writes dialogue fits perfectly with Robert Downey Jr.
Yes.
Just the delivery. I mean, picture Last Boy Scout with Robert Downey Jr. in the Bruce Willis role. You can, because it would fit perfectly. So, I mean, sometimes writers just know how to write for an actor.
They have their voice.
And when you have somebody as good as Downey Jr. that can take anything and make it great, when you have something that's made for him that's already great, he just elevates it that much more.
And I think that after seeing this, you know, his fingerprints are definitely all over this movie. And I think that he is, a lot of the reasons that I like this movie, you can attribute directly to him specifically.
My friend Westy and I texted back and forth about it. He said something similar to this. I think I like it more as a Shane Black movie than I do as an Iron Man movie. And his point was, he likes it. It's a great Shane Black movie, not necessarily a great kickoff to Phase 2, which I could see that. But I like it as a Shane Black movie, and I like Shane Black movies. So
I guess I don't necessarily disagree with that. I mean, I do think it actually serves as, I guess it's sort of a kickoff for Phase 2. I mean, I don't know what it sets up, really, going, and maybe we'll get to that at the very end. Maybe
I
what
like
it sets
that
up.
It continues the Tony Stark storyline from The Avengers.
Right.
His personal arc. Does it advance the Marvel storyline? Maybe not that much.
No, but this is an Iron Man movie.
Does it advance the Tony Stark storyline? 100%.
Yeah.
Because go back to Captain America's critiques of him in the Avengers. Yeah, he redeems himself at the end with the self-sacrifice, but that's all this movie is Tony Stark sacrificing stuff for the better of everybody else. So
yeah, we'll get a little bit more into his particular arc a bit later, but there were a couple other new folks I want to talk about, and one is Guy Pearce as Killian. I thought he was really, really good in this, really charismatic for a villain. I wasn't in love with... I didn't like the fire stuff. I really wasn't into it at all. But I thought, as a comic villain, I thought he was really, really good.
I thought he was good. I like Guy Pearce. I don't feel like he did enough. I don't think there was enough for him there to do. You have this big reveal. I guess I just wanted more after the reveal, because his motivations kind of came off muddy at times. Like, I understood it, but... it was kind of sloppy, like the whole, you know, have the president and you get the president out of the way, have the new president in your back pocket. I understand that, especially coming from a defense standpoint where he was, but I just feel like he could have been developed a little bit more. What he had, he did great. And I mean, that's a common thing where I'm going to mention pretty much the same critique with this next one we talk about. That'll be coming up.
Yeah. You know, Rebecca Hall, you would mention, you know, your skepticism about her before the movie, really, before you had seen it. But I think that, you know, in talking about it a couple weeks ago, you know, you said she did well enough for the 2 seconds she was in the movie.
Rebecca Hall in The Town, fantastic. Rebecca Hall in a movie like Lay the Favorite ruins the movie. So I didn't know, especially because she replaced Jessica Chastain, and I'm glad Jessica Chastain wasn't in this, because I thought Rebecca Hall did really good for the role, but the role was completely wasted. Like, I thought for what she was asked to do, she did really good, but she wasn't asked to do anything important. Her whole character was useless, pretty much. I mean, I understand. She created the extremists, but eh.
I mean, we'll talk about that a bit later when we wrap up her story arc. But I mean, I just kind of wanted to, like, her performance at least.
Her performance I thought was good. Right. I thought it was written weak, because we'll talk about it more later. But the changes and just everything there for what she was given, I thought she did well. She wasn't needed in the movie.
Fair enough.
At all.
One last sort of newcomer that played a decent role in the film was Ty Simpkins. He played kind of the little kid, the short round, so to speak, to Robert Downey Jr. when he gets kind of ejected from the Iron Man suit. I thought, actually, that was one of my favorite parts of the movie.
I liked it. And a lot of the internet is saying, like, the kid stuff was pointless. I liked it. You saw Tony Stark in a different... I mean, you know...
It was kind of a different side of him. Kind of.
Yeah.
He was still, you know, that sort of jerk. I mean, he calls the kid a pussy. Like,
yeah. About his dad leaving.
Right. Like, which is pretty...
He said stuff that you say to adults, and adults are old enough and mature enough to be like, screw this guy, yeah, and leave him. But this kid's just right by him the whole time. So it's like, in a way, he kind of met his match from somebody that can actually take all the crap that he could dish out. And it does turn kind of playful later, but... I liked the kid angle. I did too, and that
could have been something that could have been absolutely nauseating, but for what it was, I thought it was really good. I felt like that was one of the parts of the movie that were absolutely perfect. There is another newcomer in the movie that we'll get to later.
Actually, and the James Badge Dale.
Yeah, we'll get to both of those guys later. I mean,
and Stephanie Sostak.
I'm not going to mention her too much. If you want to, go right
ahead. I thought the henchmen were good.
Yeah.
The henchmen, James Badge Dale and the other girl, I thought were good for henchmen, which that's a role that in comic book movies is very often just throwaway parts. I thought they both brought something very cool to it, and they actually delivered pretty well.
Very much so. So much so that I actually made a note to talk about Badge Dale later. But without further ado, we'll go ahead and get into kind of the plot of the movie. And in the first 5 minutes, I feel like they do a really good job of setting up, you know, this extremist, this regeneration ability. And they kind of, you see where the villains are going to come, at least where one of the villains is going to come from in, you know, this scientist in Killian that was kind of spurned by Tony Stark.
I didn't like the spurning. I understand, like, I thought that was played up too much, because Killian's motives were much bigger than just get back at the guy that left him on a rooftop years ago. But the way the beginning of the movie sets up, that's kind of what it makes it seem like. That's what it makes it seem like.
That's the only reason he's gonna, yeah.
And it's not. But I liked it. It was set up. You saw Tony Stark, his pre-Iron Man Tony Stark, and Rebecca Hall. I thought it was a cool way of setting him up.
Yeah, it was nice. A lot of times flashbacks in movies can be kind of ham-handed.
Especially when you're starting with a voiceover going right to a flashback.
Yeah, I got a little nervous when they started doing it, but I thought it was carried off well enough. One of the things that he mentions a couple times in that voiceover is demons specifically. And you know, I knew that this was going to be a darker movie, and I think that, you know, we had kind of knocked back and forth the idea of maybe the demon in the bottle storyline, where maybe to deal with the events of the Avengers, Tony Stark was going to, you know, become a bit of an alcoholic. Now, I mean, I think that maybe by saying demons twice, I think that's maybe a little bit of a nod to people that were more familiar with the comics, but it didn't go in that particular direction. But I still think that it was handled coolly, like in an interesting way. His character flaws, his
PTSD,
yeah,
kind,
I think,
of,
yeah, sort
was,
of.
I felt like that was underused because it just kind of disappears. I almost feel like if the drunken fight in Iron Man 2 doesn't happen, then you can take that angle to where he's drinking a lot to get over New York.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like addressing him as a heavy drinker in 2 kind of ruined it for this one. But
I was looking at as it set it up for this one.
Yeah.
But I think either one of those makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
And then kind of after that, after we get back into sort of modern times, so to speak, you know, we get our first glimpse of the Mandarin in sort of the Osama bin Laden type video. And I think it sets him up as, you know, a really, really good villain almost. And maybe it's just for the first, you know, 2 minutes, but, you know, I'm being reminiscent of, you know, the Joker, thinking like, this guy is going to be nuts. Big time terrorist, big time bad dude.
Nothing to lose. This is Iron Man's, arguably his biggest, you know, from the comics, his most well-known villain that was set up pretty awesome. And I thought the video, especially the first one, did an awesome job setting that up. And it's like, all right.
Yeah, like it's all out on the table now. We kind of, at this point, you know all the players in the game. You're not sure how they all fit together, but it's not looking like it's going to be a good day at the office for Tony Stark. We mentioned a couple times how close this movie, it feels more of a sequel to the Avengers in that it is a sequel to Iron Man or Iron Man 2. And I think that part of the reason it feels like that is the humor seems like it's very close. And the throwaway lines in this movie, I thought, were just as good as they were in the Avengers. It's just really quick stuff, one-off from Robert Downey Jr. that almost seems to get lost in that they're on the next thing immediately. But I think it works so well.
Because he's so quick. And that's the thing, is he delivers them so flawlessly that it's just him talking. It's not him taking time to make a joke. And again, it goes back to Shane Black. But, oh, I mean, Whedon's a witty writer.
Yes.
Favreau has witty moments. Justin Theroux can do it. So, I mean, they've had writers that do know how to write a well-crafted joke. And Robert Downey Jr. is the best at delivering those.
His timing is incredible.
To where they do seem like throwaway lines because people just move on from them because you're expecting him to make a joke, so in your mind, you've already moved on. He makes the joke, and you're already there.
And they don't linger on it. They're not waiting for you to laugh. You either get it or you don't, but either way. And that's kind of where I felt like Whedon's style and Shane Black's style worked so well together. Yeah. And to me, that it couldn't have been any better, you know, using Avengers as a launching point, you know, for this movie. It did seem like it fit in really, really well. Moving on to kind of the, and I use air quotes for explanation of the extremists, the genetic recoding. I mean, they used all the fancy CGI to see inside, you know, Killian's brain. But, I mean, I am a relatively intelligent grown man, and I was kind of struggling to understand that.
I think that's by design. I'm going to use this reference multiple times throughout this conversation.
It's the reference that comes up in this scene.
This
right?
is the bed they made.
Yeah.
Marvel has to lie in this. So you've made an Iron Man movie that feels realistic. You've made an Iron Man 2 that feels realistic. You know, there's a line in the Avengers about, oh, once the guy from, you know, falls from the sky with a hammer.
Yeah.
And, like, now stakes, but you're still in this realistic setting. You can't just randomly have people regenerating and breathing fire.
Sure.
You have to try to explain it. We're in a real, in Green Lantern, if there were to do a Green Lantern 2 and a villain spit fire, nobody cares. I don't need a genetic explanation for that. But in this, you're trying to
keep
the world
real. It had to be grounded in reality.
Like Jurassic Park. Did that Jurassic Park need a 5-minute, you know, explanation of the genetics? It didn't, but to make it feel more real, it did.
But and that was done well, though. This, I'm not
this
sure.
This was a little overkill.
It wasn't done as well.
No, it wasn't done as well. But I understand why they had to try. And if they make it confusing to where you don't get it, well, at least they tried. You just didn't get it.
Oh, yeah. So it's on me.
That's pretty much. That's. No, I'm not saying, like,
no, I know.
That's the approach where I'll make this sound complicated. If you don't think I explained it well enough, I did. You just didn't get
it. Just listen back again. Rewind it, whatever. It's hard to mention this movie without talking a lot about the Avengers. I feel like we've done it a couple times. But what I will say is this movie didn't do it way, way, way too much. It felt like the perfect amount of nods to that movie. And I thought that, you know, we mentioned it before that it does kind of, this movie ties nicely into what happened to Tony Stark in the Avengers. And I think the garage scene, you know, where he, you know, is talking to Pepper about, you know, being messed up, not being able to sleep. He's doing essentially the only thing that he knows that he can't control, the only thing he knows how to do. And I thought the garage scene was perfect. And if they'd have left it there, I'd have been fine. But I felt like the flashbacks and the dream sequence that immediately followed it was just a little too much. I got it.
Yeah, and you didn't have to see Avengers. It was referenced enough to where you understood enough about what happened to where you didn't have to see Avengers for this to 100% make sense. But if you'd seen Avengers, like, you understand it. And it's not repeating it for because you've already seen it.
Yeah, it's not necessarily spoiling the Avengers.
There's enough there to get you caught up if you didn't see the Avengers, but not enough there to where if you've seen the Avengers, you're like, I've seen it already, just move on. Like, there's not enough to, they're not reliving it, you know? It's not the trailer for Grown Ups 2.
Right. They don't beat you over the head with it, but, you know, I thought if you, with the exception of that dream sequence, I thought it was referenced perfectly. You know, it's there. It's the highest grossing film you know, of all time, so that you can't ignore it. You also can't ignore James Badge Dale's character. He's already shown up in the movie once already, had kind of a nice exchange with Jon Favreau, and then the scene at the theater I really think kind of starts to drive home the point that this is more than just kind of your standard run-of-the-mill throwaway essentially right-hand man in a comic book movie.
He's actually useful. Like, and he's competent.
Useful, competent, and
Kind of cool.
He has a certain amount of charisma to him, and I think the play back and forth that they have, him and Happy, before they start fighting, I thought was really, really good.
Yeah, no. I liked Badge Dale in this a lot, and he's going to invoke Statham comparisons because of stature and, like, you know, style and how he looks, but same with Luke Goss. Like, those are three actors that they're all charismatic and they all bring about the same stuff. But Badge Dale, he did really good with what he had. And
which is kind of a theme.
And he had a lot to do. Like, he, you know, I say Rebecca Hall didn't have much. Guy Pearce should have had more. I thought James Badge Dale had more than you would expect from a henchman.
Yes.
And he did awesome with it. So did the other girl and, like, the other henchman type thing. I thought they did awesome because those are so, those kind of characters are so disposable and so easy to write and so easy to just write lazily.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that some thought was put into them, it was cool. So.
And there were plenty of disposable kind of characters, especially towards the end. But, you know, for the main villains, they definitely didn't fall into that category. And I was just as happy for that. They dropped an interesting clue that I didn't catch the first time, but during the Tony Jarvis CGI CSI scene where they're kind of looking at the bombing and Tony Stark's putting everything together about the Mandarin, he actually says, Well, there's a lot of theater going on here. There's things that don't seem to make sense. It's the guerrilla training in South America. It's the Chinese name that he's got. He, you know, he says there's a lot of theater going on. And I just think after seeing it again, it's kind of like,
it makes sense the second time. Yes. The first time, it's just a line that.
Yes, absolutely. It just lays there. But, you know, I thought it was at least worth pointing out because I did sit through the movie twice. And then kind of after that scene is the attack on Stark's house.
Which the setup to that was awesome.
Yeah.
The Tony Stark getting in the limo. Is there anything you want to say to the Mandarin? And he gives his home address. Like, that's just Tony Stark being badass.
Impulsive.
Tony Stark. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I thought it was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, as it turns out, I guess maybe they didn't need the home address because Rebecca Hall found it. Or maybe that's how she found it because he said it on national TV. But at any rate, the Mandarin finds his house and they dispatch James Badge Dale with some helicopters with missiles. And they essentially blow the entire place up. And I guess if you kind of look at it, like, that's kind of the end of the first act. And he's essentially lost everything. I mean, he's kind of separated from his girl. He's got all his suits, you think, get blown up. The one that he's in gets pretty well torn apart. His house is gone. I mean, it's looking pretty dark.
And I saw a trailer that spoiled the suit going on Pepper.
Yeah.
That goes back to, I think that's a really cool moment if that's the first I've seen it.
Yes.
Because I see it in the trailer and I think, oh, crap, they put Pepper in this Iron Man suit. Like, I don't want to see that. But in the moment,
it's cool how he does it.
It was awesome in the moment.
Why he does it.
Yeah, and why he does it. And that was like a nice exchange. Like, I got you first. Like, yeah. That was cool. The whole destruction scene, I thought, was just done awesome.
It was kind of fun. And then it kind of harkened back to, I mean, I know you're going to get upset when I talk about Spider-Man. Like, you know, Spider-Man losing his powers. It felt a bit like that. You know, in this suit, because it didn't have the flight capabilities, it didn't have the weapons. So essentially it was, okay, Tony Stark's a really smart dude, and you can't forget that. That really is his most valuable weapon, is his intellect. And he does use that to, you know, dispatch the helicopters the best way he can. And I thought that was really, really neat the way they did that. It wasn't, because I mean, he very easily could have just been complete Iron Man at that point and tore those things up. It wouldn't have been a big deal at all.
Yeah.
Probably the house wouldn't have been destroyed.
I just, that was a good just action sequence in a movie. And it was good because it wasn't just a blow them up action scene. It advanced the plot. Like, it got the ball rolling on the plot.
Right. It kind of set up the separation.
It established right there that this is a Tony Stark movie, not an Iron Man movie.
Right. Because essentially right after that is when he makes his crash landing in Tennessee and his suit is essentially useless. It's got no power at all, and he's kind of just dragging it around the snow. And it's where he meets the kid. I think his name was Harley or something in the movie. It's irrelevant. I thought that the dynamic that those two had was really, really good. I mean, the kid was essentially his sidekick in the movie, and at no point did I find it annoying or, oh, there's no possible way a kid could do that.
Yeah, it was played up well because it wasn't. Tony Stark didn't really change. Like, he was, it's not like, oh, here's a kid, I got to be
gonna
cool
adopt
hearted.
Him. Yeah.
He stayed the same, and the kid didn't let that deter him at all. The kid stayed the same. So, I mean, you have these two personalities that are going to be what they are going back and forth, and I thought it worked really well.
I think the kid had maybe a little Tony Stark in him, in that, you know, he was, you talk about Tony Stark being maybe manipulative when the kid is trying to do the same thing and like guilt him into giving him a ride because his dad left. Like, that is kind of that is a really funny exchange. And it's kind of the last exchange they have because he drives away and leaves the kid there in the snow
after this big like fight.
After he almost got killed by James Badge Dale. Yeah. I mean, it is a really, really good couple scenes, and I'm glad that they didn't overextend it and ruin it. It was, again, we talked about, you know, the Avenger references were not overdone. This wasn't overdone either, and I'm glad because it really could have ruined what I thought was one of my favorite parts of the movie.
It's so easy that you throw a kid in there, because he wasn't just like a cute kid. He wasn't like being, he was smart. Like, he was a well-written kid, and he had a personality. It wasn't just the token kid character.
You just need a cute kid.
Yeah, it wasn't that. He wasn't Raven Simone. Like, he actually served a purpose, and he did well. Again, kid did awesome with what he was given, and he was given a cool part.
Definitely. Kind of another sort of offbeat interaction that I wanted to talk about briefly was when he's in the TV truck with the cameraman.
Adam Pally, yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was hilarious, too. Like, just shows him the tattoo, and it's just absolutely... it could have been over the top, but Robert Downey Jr. is so good. Like, he wouldn't let that be silly.
And that's, Adam Pally is really good in doses. Adam Pally he's like a controlled goofball kind of. So he's really good in that borderline going too far, but keeping it under wraps. I thought that was an awesome scene. Like,
yeah.
It was fun. Like, it had the fun that all the Marvel movies have had, like, it without being too out of place.
Right.
And without going on for too long.
That was it, too. Like, it was just, I feel like it was maybe 2 minutes, and that was it. We didn't see or hear anything from Gary anymore, and that was fine. For what he had, he was perfect. It was well written. It was well acted. It was a really good little sequence there. Shortly after that, we mentioned kind of the ending of the interaction with Tony Stark and the kid, and kind of the thing the kid leaves him with is, to get over your PTSD, do something about it, do what you do, and that's building things. So he essentially goes to the Home Depot and builds himself, not really an Iron Man suit, but some sort of infiltration armor.
Yeah,
I
mean, it was just a nice turn because the kid essentially said the same thing to him. Like, dads leave. That's what they do. No need to be a pussy about it. The kid essentially said the same thing in not so many words. Like, you lost. Do something about it.
Yeah. Grow a pair and, do what you do. And he did what he does. It seemed kind of like a MacGyver Iron Man, but still kind of cool. It was interesting to see him. You said it's a Tony Stark movie, and this was Tony Stark being Tony Stark without Iron Man.
I do have a problem with this a little bit, though, because Tony Stark's a millionaire playboy. So he's doing, like, black ops stuff. Like, yeah, you're going to pick stuff up along the way being Iron Man. And I bought that. But then later when he's with Rhodey, there's a line of, like, how do I hold the gun? Or something like that. There's a throwaway line to Rhodey that makes it seem like Rhodey's the experienced one. Tony Stark doesn't know anything about what he's doing. But you just took this heavily guarded compound single-handedly.
Yeah, I mean...
That's such a minor gripe. And I complain about people reaching for things to complain about, but that takes me out of it because I think it's like the only lazily written
He moment. Becomes, for like 5 minutes, Jason Bourne.
Or he becomes Rhodey.
Or, yeah, either one. But yeah, I mean, I see your point, and I, to a certain extent, I do agree with you. But I think, in that particular scene, the thing that people are going to come away with is not necessarily his stealthy spy ability. It's the fact that the Mandarin is not the droids we're looking for.
That's the best reveal. Like, that's such a good... Because when it first happens and he comes out, it's a line about taking a dump.
Yeah.
With two girls. It's like, I wouldn't go in there for a while. And at that point, like, he's still Mandarin in your head.
I didn't buy it at that point.
So you think that he's the guy making those videos that just took a massive dump. Then it gets more into the real reveal that he's just a drugged up actor. And I mean, there is that part at first where you think it's still the Mandarin.
Yeah.
Just playing
okay.
Him.
That's a body double. Fine.
Yeah. But I thought it was cool. It's a ballsy move.
Yes, it is.
The balls on Shane Black to pull this move. I mean, that's to compare. Iron Man's not Batman or not Superman, but if Iron Man has a Joker or has a Lex Luthor, it's probably the Mandarin. It's just not as well known because Iron Man not as well known. But you took his biggest adversary and made it a cover up.
Yeah.
That's ballsy.
Yes, it is.
And I think it worked.
That's the thing. It is ballsy, and it worked.
And it
I mean,
made
that,
it work.
That could, you realize, I mean, I'm sure you do, but how mad people could have been if
they
that.
Still were, and he pulled it off. Could you imagine if it were handled even sloppier?
I guess that's what I'm saying. Like, if he didn't absolutely execute the hell out of that, not that there would have been rioting in the streets, but I mean, this movie would have just got blown up. But that's, I mean, good on the studio for letting him do that. Good on him for trying it. And like that, I talk about how much I love old film noirs. This is a straight out red herring, and you never see that anymore. I never in a million years expected
it. I never would have guessed it.
And you just have to tip your cap and say, fair play, Iron Man.
And I immediately, once I saw this, it's like, I can't talk about this movie until my friends see it. Like, I don't want to. And my friend Jake said something to Wes. Westy didn't get to see it till a week after. And Jake said something. He's like, oh, you need to see it because somebody will probably spoil it without knowing.
Yes.
And it is such a big reveal that a lot of people might not, and because it's not the Joker or it's not Lex Luthor, like, people might not realize how big of a reveal that is. It worked. I really, really, the confidence that Marvel had to put into him, that Shane Black has the balls to go and say, hey, this is what I want to do with the Mandarin, and that Marvel Studios is like, all right.
Yep, we're on board for that.
Because, and then fanboys are going to be mad. Fanboys are going to be mad no matter what. When you think about it, how many more Iron Man movies are there going to be? Probably not many more until you reboot it. And then if you reboot it, all bets are off.
The Mandarin can be, yeah.
And then you're not going to see him in an Avengers. So it's just, you got him in there. You got him in this Iron Man trilogy at least.
You used him.
Even though it wasn't exactly how you expect it. But it was a really cool moment. Because then from then on, Kingsley's awesome in the movie.
Yes. Like, and I mean, he was good.
So funny all the way until the end.
Right. He was good up to that point as well. But then it's just like,
it's like a different character.
Yeah. And it was so, so good. I can remember I saw this movie on, it was the 3rd when it came out, like that Friday. Free Comic Book Day was the next day. So I was at a couple comic shops listening to people that hadn't seen it yet. And they were talking about the Mandarin and how Ben Kingsley was going to absolutely nail it.
He did.
And he was going to be a great, great comic book villain. And I just had a smile on my face because I said, oh, God, these guys are in for something. And I don't know if they're going to like it, if they're going to hate it, but they thought the same thing I did. They're going to be tricked the same way I was. And like I said, fair play.
And
that was awesome.
I always think that's such a weird thing to hate a movie for. It's a big twist, yeah, but you didn't expect it. Like, you go in expecting, okay, things are gonna happen, Iron Man's gonna fight the Mandarin, Iron Man's gonna win.
Right.
If you don't get exactly that, why would you be mad? That's like Sunshine. People complain about Sunshine for taking such a weird turn. You don't see that turn coming. Like, sometimes movies take weird turns and people want to complain about them, but it's just like, then on the flip side, you complain about movies being predictable and all being the same. So it's like,
that's why I asked at the front, like, what did you think going in, and then what did you think going out? This is probably the one where it absolutely turns, and it is not the movie that you thought it was going to be going in. You know, we can say, well, I thought he was going to be an alcoholic. Yeah, whatever. That's small potatoes. This is huge.
Yeah.
I think we've kind of gone on enough about the Mandarin. It's cool. You may like it, you may not like
but you
it,
know
but
what?
It's ballsy. You got to admit
it's ballsy, and what it does is it sets up, like, okay, what can the Mandarin realistically do? The Mandarin can bomb. He can cause, like, chaos and damage. That's pretty bad. What can Guy Pearce do? Infiltrate the White House, have the president in his back pocket?
Yeah.
That's a little more terrifying. So, I mean,
it's like Cobra.
Yeah, you kind of set up bigger stakes with the villain by revealing the Mandarin as an actor.
Yeah, as, you know, he's essentially a puppet. Another kind of puppet, I guess, was Rebecca Hall's character. And she kind of gets dispatched with relative little amount of fanfare there. I mean, I actually think that her character wasn't completely pointless. I mean, I think, you know, she obviously, she did the extremist thing. And then you know, I know that you don't think that she showed enough back and forth. Like, is she good? Is she bad?
I think she showed too much of that. It was her whole role was a roller coaster, because she shows up at the house and then it gets destroyed. So, okay, was she in with them? But then when she's with Pepper Potts and you realize, oh, she's with Killian, that I kind of saw coming, even though she was at the house. Like, I kind of saw that turn coming. And then she's with Iron Man, or she's with Robert Downey, and, you know, she's just, like, 100% on board with what Killian's doing. But then a minute later, she's now flip-flop back to being on Tony Stark's side. There was no consistency with her. There was no...
I think the consistency was that she was in it for her project, for Extremis, and she just wanted that to be fixed. I think that to a certain extent, she was used like the Mandarin was used. They didn't really sign on to do all of the killing that was happening. She wanted Stark because
she
wanted his
help to have a problem
fix
with
it.
She didn't go to Killian saying like, oh, you shouldn't have, like, she was okay with Stark's house being completely destroyed and Pepper and him almost dying.
I don't think she would, because she was there.
She went right to Killian when he came back.
Well, yeah, when he showed up, she didn't get killed. But, I mean, at that point, I think she was still trying to play both sides.
I just
have it both ways. Didn't work out for her.
It didn't work out for her, and it didn't... If that was the... I don't think that was displayed well enough. I think she came off sloppy.
Maybe.
And I don't
I mean,
think
that's the impression that I got from it, and that's why I was okay with it.
I think she was written sloppily. Again, Rebecca Hall could go one or two ways. I thought she was really, really good. She was very charming on screen. She did really well with what she was given. I just don't think the character was very well written. And I don't think you could replace that character and it'd be fine.
You'd have had to do some workarounds. I mean, I think...
I don't think she was that integral. She created it, yes. But you could rework that and it doesn't change anything all that much.
I guess Killian could have created it, to use on himself. And then, you know, found kind of the side bonus uses of it. And maybe that would have strengthened his character into being just kind of the evil genius that was kind of controlling everything all along. And maybe I'd agree with you at that point. But at any rate, you mentioned that things are kind of off the table when the big guy with the hammer falls out of the sky. They did kind of just seem to ignore some things that were just sort of nuts, like all of a sudden, and he only does it once, just breathes the fire. He was the only one that was able to do that. He did it once at Rhodey, and then that was, you breathe fire.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. The henchman, knowing the mileage from Tennessee.
That I don't see. Ask me mileage between any cities.
Okay, what is the mileage between Portland, Maine, and Key West, Florida?
812 miles. Ask me two more.
Okay, I get it. You can say 800. Now, I didn't Google it to see if he was right. But my point is, there's no way. They played it off like he was right. And he, of course,
maybe
I just know things like that. Why would you? That's ridiculous.
The co-host of my other podcast, you can name a number and he'll tell you what president that was and give you facts about that president. To me, there's no need to
know
that.
How many presidents are there?
40-some.
Okay, how many cities are there in America?
100-some?
Yeah, probably.
But that's two big ones. Well, it's Tennessee and it's a big one.
Yeah.
I didn't see anything. I think that's nitpicking.
I don't think it's nitpicking. I think that it's just a symptom of maybe some problems in this movie where they just, especially towards the end, when they were just like, yep, that happened, deal with it.
This is where it starts to fall apart.
Yes.
Where when you think back to it, because it's not in the notes. That's why I'm going to say it now. We've barely mentioned Rhodey. We've barely mentioned Iron Patriot. Because, yeah, maybe it was not the best developed plot line. I do like that Rhodey's under the Iron Patriot suit. He's just wearing khakis and a polo.
Yeah.
I like that. But this is where I talked about earlier. Marvel made this bed. And you have to, if you're going to lie in it, you have to address it. You have S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
You have the Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
So who are you going to have protect the president on his plane? Iron Man Jr.? Like, why is nobody from S.H.I.E.L.D. involved? Why are none of the Avengers involved?
The S.H.I.E.L.D.'s not a government agency. I guess I'm okay with that. What I don't like is all the suits that Tony Stark had are coded specifically to him.
Yeah.
So why do they just have one available for hijack?
Yeah, they have Rhodey's suit that just anybody can get in.
Anybody can get the James Badge Dale, the president. Anybody could just get into that. Seems like a little bit of an oversight.
Yeah, and I mean, the whole Iron Patriot angle, I think, could have been done better because there were some okay moments, like the little kid saying, "Oh, I like that better." Like,
yeah, that
and the dialogue between Tony and him after the name change.
Yeah,
there was that led
the Bill
to
Maher thing. I kind of liked,
yeah,
all of that.
War Machine rocks. Like,
yeah,
that was some good moments, but I just feel Iron Patriot as a whole could have been done better.
Yeah, and I do think that, you know, by the time he really shows up in the movie, that's when, to me, it starts losing steam. And specifically after the what I call the skydiving scene, after the president gets kidnapped and you dispatch James Badge Dale, you have a scene that lasts a couple minutes where Iron Man saves some people.
We're on different sides on this. If you're I like that.
It's pointless.
I don't think it's pointless in a superhero movie. If
Why?
If this is Lethal Weapon or just a throwaway like buddy cop action movie, okay, it's ridiculous. But every hero movie has to have something like this. The bridge scene in Amazing Spider-Man, that's essentially pointless, but it serves a purpose to establish your hero.
Hero's already established. This is Iron Man 3.
It shows that he's still a hero to everybody and not just the big fish. Like, he's not just out going after the guy who's trying to get the president out of the White House. Like, he's still there to save everybody. He's still everybody's hero. I really liked that scene. I loved that scene.
It didn't need to be in there.
Did it advance the plot?
No, not at all.
Was it awesome to watch? Was it fun to watch and add to the experience of the movie? I think so. I think it drives home Iron Man because really you don't see Iron Man do a lot of heroic stuff through the movie. You see Tony Stark be a hero, but you don't really see Iron Man saving people throughout until that scene.
Not in this one, no. I mean, a lot of it, you know, he's not doing the Iron Man thing. Like, he's at that point, he'd been out of the suit for quite a while.
And he still is out of the suit.
Yeah, spoiler alert. But yeah, to me, it just seemed like they just needed another 5-minute action scene.
See, I liked it, but I thought it cheapened it. Him getting hit by a truck right away, which was a funny laugh, which I'm fine with him getting hit by the truck. Him not being in the suit cheapens it.
Because there's really no danger on his part.
No.
And I guess I would have felt better if, you know, there would have been, you know, something to be gained from having saved all those people. Like, I don't know.
I guess I value human life more importantly than you do.
No, or if it was like, okay, Iron Man has to make a choice between killing the henchmen or saving the people. And he makes the choice to save the people. James Badge Dale gets away. Kills him later.
Yeah.
Whatever. But that didn't happen.
No, he said you can't save the people and the president. And he goes for the people over the president.
At no point did he really even know where the president was.
But instead of going to find him, he saves these people instead of letting them fall to their deaths.
But at that point, did we even know the president was alive? No. You're left to...
For a superhero movie, this scene is needed, I think.
I don't know.
For a summer blockbuster, big-time action superhero movie, it has to have a scene like this. Whether it's in the... Maybe it's misplaced. Maybe this scene, not necessarily the exact same scene, maybe what the scene accomplished should have been earlier in the movie and not in the middle of the third act.
Yeah, maybe that's
it.
So maybe that's
placement it. Is it, but I think you have to have a scene like this in this kind of movie.
At any rate, we'll move on to the final, by the end of the third act. And this is where I felt like the movie did get a bit of the sequel syndrome, where it was just suits everywhere. Just Iron Men's out the wazoo. Each of them kind of had their own little personalities.
And this is his backup supply.
Yeah. And they did seem a bit like the action figure Batmans that are like, here's Arctic Dive Batman. Here's Volcano Mountain Batman.
It seemed like the whole battle sequence was, at the end, was to sell toys.
Yep.
Because there's Ironmonger toys. Like, there's toy sets that are a bunch of the different suits. Like, that I didn't like as much. And what's Tony Stark doing, really? Like, he's not controlling them. He's running.
Yeah.
So where is he needed? Like, at that point, why is he in the suit at all? When we come to the movie, why is Tony Stark ever wearing the Iron Man suit?
If they can all be, you know, heroes, essentially, by letting the computer run them, yeah, I think I would just do that. I mean, I'd just sit and, you know, drink a martini, make a couple wisecracks. But, yeah, it did seem to trivialize Iron Man because there's an endless supply, essentially. Because
that's his backup supply.
Yeah. That we thought had been destroyed, turns out it wasn't. Kind of something else that, you know, we had kind of talked about it a little bit is when we thought, you know, hey, that's ballsy to kill off Pepper when she falls 200 feet or whatever into the fire. kind of the whole time you're thinking, well, she does have
the
ability.
Extremis in her.
Yeah, and that's hit you. You were hit over the face with that, so you knew that going
there
in.
There is that brief part of me that likes to watch Gwyneth Paltrow die so much that I convinced myself she
What's
didn't
in the
have
box?
It. Yeah. So I mean, like her falling, I actually let out like a little fist pump, but then I remembered, and it's like, oh.
Yeah, and then to kind of compound things, not only does she not die, but
she saves the day.
Yeah, she shows up to do what Iron Man could not do, and that's destroy Killian.
This is my problem with the villains. I talked up Badge Dale. I talked up the chick. You kill them so many times and they can't die. And then until it's convenient for the plot, like that was my problem. Is that what decides how they're actually dead?
I thought like throwing the armor on him and then having it self-destruct, I think that works.
That's a
much
good,
better.
But just shooting a hole in him like he did for Badge Dale.
Yeah.
Why is that enough to finish the job? So,
maybe he's a vampire.
Yeah.
Go through the heart.
But no, the suit, that was a good. That was awesome.
That
loved
was perfect
because
then that essentially, you know, he sacrificed Iron Man. To destroy.
That was perfect.
Yes, that was really, really good. But
that
then it
should have been the end of Killian.
But it got
that
undermined.
Should have been the end. Pepper Potts should have been dead. Roll credits. I'm a happy camper.
Yeah, but then there was, you know, about another 10 minutes after that. And at that point, yeah, I was ready for it to be over anyway. So at the end of the movie, you know, he gets the electromagnet taken out of him. And, you know, he blows up all of his Iron Man suits.
And he cures Pepper?
Yeah. I guess
and
he does
Rebecca
that.
Hall's alive in a hospital room.
I guess she just got shot, like
in the stomach, and then she's just
takes a while to die. I guess
again, that was pointless. Like, why do we need to see her just sitting there staring out a window?
Maybe so you know that I don't know. She wasn't all bad. She didn't have to die. I don't know, but
just pointless.
Where
everything
I mean,
about her was pointless.
Where does that really kind of leave Iron Man as a character? I mean, you know, are we left to figure that, well, I guess he'll just rebuild the suits or.
And there's that thing at the end where he does take one. He takes something.
Yeah, he
from
takes
the rubbish.
Yeah, the robot arms and the screwdriver. So you think that maybe he's going to start tinkering again, but.
It was convenient because Robert Downey Jr.'s contract with Marvel is up. They're negotiating, they're trying to get him back for Avengers 2 and 3. No talk of Iron Man 4.
Right.
This kind of sets it up to where. If you don't get Tony Stark back, you don't get Robert Downey Jr. back, you can move on from Iron Man.
Yes. You can write him out of Avengers.
And still have Iron Man. You can create, somebody else can step into Iron Man if they have to. This kind of opens the door for that. It could happen. I mean, it didn't in the comics.
I guess it could, but I feel like this is kind of Marvel hedging their bet, saying if we can't get Robert Downey Jr., he's essentially in Iron Man 3, kind of hung up Iron Man, so to speak.
Plus
he blows them all up.
Plus, that gives you a storyline for Avengers 2.
Yeah.
You know he's going to be back for it. Iron Man is, you know.
I don't know. I mean,
but at this point,
if you can't get Robert Downey Jr., I wouldn't bother with Iron Man. I really wouldn't.
But then he doesn't have to be in the suits. We established that this movie.
Well,
again, why is he ever going to put the suit on again?
You could have him come back and just, you know, kind of have a very small role in Avengers and not use Iron Man as a hero. I mean, for God's sake, they could use more Hawkeye. You could use more Black Widow. There's talk of Vision. I mean, you know, there's any number.
Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch are pretty much confirmed to be in it.
Oh, yeah. They're doing the time traveling aspect to that, right? I thought.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, whatever. But yeah, I guess you don't necessarily need. There may not be any more involvement, you know, from Tony Stark, from Iron Man in the rest, you know, of Phase 2. And I think that this movie does a good job of, if this is all we're going to get, I think you're left, you know, pretty satisfied with the arc.
I think it closes out a solid trilogy with the first and last. It's got good bookends of a solid trilogy. The second part's a little weaker, but with the Avengers, you could do where X-Men went wrong. Because I think where X-Men went wrong from the get-go is, yeah, it's great if you have the cast come back, but you know, if you get to a point where Marsden doesn't want to come back, where Hugh Jackman doesn't want to come back, you could keep going. There are so many characters. And you could get that way with the Avengers. if Iron Man, if you close off Iron Man's arc and he's gone, you could still make Avengers movies. There's either introduce new characters through movies like they're doing with Ant-Man, or introduce them in the movie, smaller characters like Quicksilver or Scarlet Witch that
right.
don't need their own movie. Like, you could keep making, you could be on Avengers 7 without Evans, Ruffalo, or any of them.
Yeah.
I mean, you could keep doing it, and there's still enough stories there because you could establish yourself along the way, and it'll be interesting to see how long Marvel can go. And that's what bums me out is when they let franchises die because of actors when you don't have to. Like, Batman can keep going. People know who Batman is.
It does, but, I mean, you said it before, like, you can do the Iron Man reboot, and that would be fine. But, I mean, I think for this Iron Man in this universe, I don't want to see somebody else take that mantle.
I'm not saying I want to. I'm saying it's set up to where if they want to take it, pieces are in place.
Maybe they are, but I would rather just leave it as it stands at the end of this where – either, you know, you're going to have more of Robert Downey Jr. or you're not. And if you don't, that's the end of Iron Man. But fair enough to say that is the end of our Iron Man discussion. I mean, I think we both like the movie. Maybe not as much as we thought we would going into it. Or at least in my case, not as much as I did coming out of it the first time.
Yeah, and I sometimes, like, I still haven't watched Dark Knight Rises a second time. I liked the experience I had. I don't want to nitpick it, and I feel like I would. And this, a few weeks out from seeing it, I do find myself nitpicking it. I don't want to watch it again.
Yeah, I did more.
At least right now, because I will pick it apart more, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I liked the movie. Yeah, there's a lot I didn't like about it, but overall, I really liked it.
Give the folks some bonus watch this, movies that we really like, with three in the title.
I went all the way back to the 80s.
I know. This is way back for you.
3 o'clock High. Just a high school Western spoof, kind of. It's
about a fight.
A fight.
Essentially. A bully going to beat
kid
up the
kid bumps into a bully and says, after school, you're mine. So it's just the rest of the day, this little kid dreading 3 o'clock and doing everything he can to get out of this fight, the showdown at noon or at three. So it takes that Western storyline and puts it in 80s high school, and it's actually a lot of fun.
Really, really good. And a Yardley Smith cameo, like, right at the very end of the movie. Actually, this might be one of the very few times when I actually pick a movie that's more contemporary than what Dave picked. It's from 1999. It's Three Kings, starring George Clooney, Mark Wahlberg, and Ice Cube. I thought originally that it was just kind of a war movie. But it was not at all.
No.
It's a heist movie and kind of a cool one. To me, it fits into the idea of this is not the movie that I thought it was. I thought it was one thing, got into it, and it's a really neat heist flick. And I like, this is when I was kind of started to turn the corner on George Clooney and thought that there might be something else to Wahlberg. I thought the dynamic between the three leads is really, really good. And I wouldn't say that it's a predictable movie either.
No. Plus, we talk highly of, we consistently talk very highly of David O. Russell. Mm-hmm. And this was his first one. His third one.
But, yeah. So those are both two solid choices. 3 o'clock High from Dave. Three Kings from me. That'll wrap up our Iron Man 3. It feels like our third movie discussion in the past month or so. I don't know.
I think it's our second in 2 weeks.
Maybe, but I was just trying to stick with your theme of threes because you are so much into the theme. Leave us your thoughts on Iron Man. Let us know what you thought about the Mandarin. If you're pissed that he wasn't actually a supervillain, we'd love to hear about it. You can let us know on our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviesonup. You can tweet your thoughts directly at Dave at moviesonup, or you can email us moviesonup@gmail.com, or you could just head right over to moviesonup.com and leave a post in the blog section, or I don't know how the internet works. There's some page that you will be able to get this particular episode from, and at the bottom of that page, I guess you can write us comments because
we get spammed all the time. Are the worst way to get a hold of us, yet Ryan still brings it up every time.
I just want
to
see it happen. It's happened once, legitimately.
Yeah, go back, check out there should be some blog posts. I keep teasing them, but I just haven't written them yet. There's a couple on deck that I will get around to writing eventually. Go check out our Chronicle episode. That was a good one. That's the first one that one of us liked it, one of us didn't. So I think that one came out kind of fun. Better than the movie.
Spoiler alert, Dave's the one that didn't like it. But yeah, I think that'll probably end our superhero kick for a little bit. I don't see us doing a Superman episode. Although if we do, it'll probably be
it'll
one
be like
of us
Chronicle.
Liked it and
yeah.
one of us didn't. Yeah, we'll have all sorts of fun stuff coming out on the website. Dave, anything else you want to plug?
Hit me up at Dave Pacella on Twitter or ericanddave.com for my other show. That's Eric with a K.
And whatever we've got coming out next week, it'll be a surprise. We'll have some surprise blog posts.
It'll be a Mandarin-style twist.
Yeah, it'll be definitely have news and trailers like we always do. But that second one, ooh, goodness, it could be anything.
Who knows?
Just have to wait and see. But until then,
keep it up.